Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, February 28th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, County, no policy in place to ban donated books. County commissioners promised that library policy matters would be agendized for the next court meeting. By Ben Schaffer. The discussion regarding Midland County Public Library books containing controversial subject matter continued Monday during the meeting of Midland County Commissioners Court. County commissioners said they do not have any policies in place that would ban donated titles based on content. County Attorney Russell Malm added the discussion that took place on February 13th between Commissioner Diane Anderson and Midland County Library Director Debbie Garza should have never happened. Malm said he should have stepped in as county attorney and kept the discussion on the list of donated library books and not policy matters, as the agenda item being discussed was simply acknowledge library donations. Commissioner Anderson, before she was cut off by Malm for delving too much into policy matters, clarified her statements from the last commissioner's court meeting that she was not attempting to ban books for adults, but her concern was more about content that can be found in youth and young adult sections at Midland's public libraries, which are run by the county government. It has come to my attention that our libraries have books in the children and youth sections that are absolutely, positively inappropriate, she said. Anderson shared a book from the public library with the Reporter Telegram called Beautiful by Amy Reed. The book is labeled YA for young adult fiction. Young adult novels in public libraries nationwide are typically available to the vast age range of 12 to 18-year-olds. Anderson highlighted examples of sexual depictions of varying degree, involving 13-year-old main character Cassie within the novel. The county commissioners promised that library policy matters would be agendized for next court meeting, so community members and the county government officials can have a more extensive dialogue on the topic. Legally, it is the commissioner's court responsibility to keep discussions on topic with the coinciding agenda items, according to Malm. Heather Bredemus, a Midlander, said the public library staff has done well to help her children learn. She began to say that while anyone can obtain a library card, patrons must display a valid form of identification to check a book out of the library, a measure to restrict children from checking out books on their own. Bredemus recalled the list of 853 banned Texas titles that Commissioner Anderson said she would compare with the list of donated Midland Library books to see if there were any matches, and questioned the criteria of deciding whether the county wants to admit certain donated books. Malm chimed in, saying the commissioner's court has no policy pertaining to subject matter that is considered in deciding on donated books, and they always accept it, the list of donations. Although Anderson said on February 13th that she would like to use this list of banned titles to qualify Midland Library donations, this is not an official policy of the county, and if they were to decide that, there would be a specific agenda item included in the commissioner's court, so local residents could join in on that dialogue. This article is entitled, MISD, $5.5 million spent on teacher apartments since 2018-19, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD has spent at least $5.5 million since 2019 on apartment complexes that were supposed to be for housing for district teachers. The district acquired Simpatico and Town and Country apartments in July 2019 to provide affordable housing options for teachers at a combined purchase of $3.2 million, the district reported last week. As tenants moved out of the apartments, the district began modernizing apartments to make them move-in ready for district staff, the district reported. Since that time, the district has spent approximately $2.3 million on renovations. Combined, the two apartment complexes offer 49 renovated apartments, 24 at Simpatico and 25 at Town and Country. Even as recently as last week, the district described Simpatico and Town and Country as, quote, the district's teacher housing units, unquote, in a Board of Trustees agenda packet information. However, the district also reported the apartments are also being used for other MISD staff. The district reported last week that of the 24 apartments at Simpatico, 16 are currently leased, and only 5 of those are leased to teachers. At Town and Country, 24 are currently leased, and 19 of those are leased to teachers. The majority of those available at Simpatico are efficiency apartments, which do not appear to be preferred by teachers, MISD noted. The apartment issue came up during last week's Midland ISD board meeting, as the district selected SLW and Associates to continue to manage both apartment complexes. MISD reports the estimated management fee per year is $38,400 for both complexes. The district provided in its agenda packet a price analysis that showed SLW and Associates showed operational reimbursement expenses of $317,500 for Simpatico apartments, 2910 West Michigan Avenue, and $170,700 for Town and Country, 3310 Bedford Avenue. The grand total management fee is listed at $526,600. Revenues to both apartments from fiscal year 2018-19 to fiscal year 2022-23 have totaled $1.413 million. Teacher housing units are available for the following per month rates: efficiency, $600, one bedroom, $675, two-bedroom, one-bath, $700. Two-bedroom, two-bath, $750. During the discussion on the item during the board meeting, board member Brendan Hodges mentioned discussions with staff about selling the properties if a buyer steps forward. This article is entitled, YWLA Student Wins Spelling Bee Showdown. Spelling Bee Rivalry Between Jayakumar and Sivakumar Lives Up to Billing, by Stuart Doreen. There might not be a better rivalry in Midland, because when Shweta Jayakumar of Young Women's Leadership Academy and Carver Center's Shriya Sivakumar step on the stage of the Midland Reporter-Telegram Regional Spelling Bee, it isn't a matter if one of the two will win, but which one. That was again the case Saturday, when the two dueled for 36 rounds, leaving behind the other competitors after round 7. It was the second straight year that the battle of the best spellers from Midland, Greenwood, Andrews, Big Spring, and Monahans turned into the Jayakumar-Sivakumar show. And those who watched got the reward of seeing the two best fight for the title, a trip to Scripps National Spelling Bee in late May, and the satisfaction of being named champion. On Saturday at the Wagner and Brown Auditorium inside the Allison Fine Arts Building at Midland College, Jayakumar turned the tables on Sivakumar, the defending champion, spelling ressorial, defined as habitually scratching the ground in search of food, and lutrine, of or relating to the others, in back-to-back rounds to claim the 2023 B, which was presented by Diamondback Energy. It was Jayakumar's second Reporter-Telegram Regional Spelling Bee title. She won in 2021 as a sixth grader and placed second last year after the first epic duel with Sivakumar. Remembering what happened last year really kept up with the motivation, Jayakumar said, because I admittedly had times where the motivation was a little lacking. But I'd remember what happened last year and how much that hurt, and how much I really wanted to win. I think that's what drove me to do it this year. In topping the field of 35, Jayakumar became the 8th speller to win multiple titles at the Midland Bee since 1993. She also delivered to YWLA its 3rd title in the last 4 years. But the Saturday Bee, which lasted more than 3 hours, was about the back and forth between two masters of the craft. Neither Jayakumar nor Sivakumar missed a word through 29 rounds. They both used distinctive styles to hear a word, sort through pronunciations, and listen to definitions and word origins to break down words and advance. They rattled off correct spellings of words like bacteriolytic, of relating to or producing destruction or dissolution of bacteria, nouveau, newly arrived or developed, immature, raw, liaise, to establish intercommunication for developing and maintaining mutual understanding, and agoraphobia, abnormal fear of being helpless in a situation from which escape may be difficult or embarrassing. "We have been friends for as long as I can remember," the 13-year-old Jayakumar said, "so competing against her has been sort of like a challenge. More of a challenge, I would say, than it would be competing against a complete stranger, because I see her outside of school and at events, so in that rivalry, we try to continue to stay friends." They are friends who have battled for nearly 60 rounds in the last 2 years, and again put a respectable field in their wake. Tristan Trinidad of Big Spring Intermediate and Easton Pitt of Bowie Fine Arts tied for third. Frunwe Frew of Santa Rita Elementary finished fifth. 3 spellers from outside Midland ISD and the City of Midland tied for sixth. Kimari Pivaral of Greenwood Intermediate School, Jasmine Prospero of Parkway Elementary in Monahans, and Daniel Pipes of Underwood Elementary in Andrews. It was arguably the best showing from spellers from the region, with 4 placing in the top 8 overall. For Sivakumar, Saturday added a 2nd place to a championship resume. Still, she is in 6th grade and still has 2 opportunities at the regional title. Considering her background, Sivakumar will be the odds-on favorite to win as a 7th and 8th grader, if she follows through with plans to attend Young Women's Leadership Academy. 3 titles would tie Sivakumar with Shrikar Chamarthy, 2017-19, for the most titles at the Reporter-Telegram Regional Spelling Bee since 1993. Results from the 36th Annual Midland Reporter-Telegram Regional Spelling Bee, presented by Diamondback Energy. 1. Shweta Jayakumar, Young Women's Leadership Academy. Shriya Sivakumar, Carver Center. Tristan Trinidad, Big Spring Intermediate. Easton Pitt, Bowie Fine Arts. 5th, Frunwe Frew, Santa Rita Elementary. Tied for 6th, Kamari Pivaral, Greenwood Intermediate School. Jasmine Prospero, Parkway Elementary. Daniel Pipes, Underwood Elementary. Tied for 8th, Charlie Perry, Midland Christian School. Geneva Smith Kuzmich, St. Anne's School. Catherine Lee, Trinity School. Tied for 11th, Andres Navarez, Bunch Elementary. Enrique Santa Cruz, De Zavala Elementary. Bennett LaGrue, Great House Elementary. Diego Rivera, Pease Communications and Technology Academy. Michael Anwaka, Yarborough Elementary. Tied for 17th, Jace Chavez, Alamo Junior High. Kanila Pertil, Bonham Elementary. Ava Gardia, Goddard Junior High. Cameron Martin, Hillander. Jalen Barrientes, Long Elementary. Erson Makahilas, Milam Elementary. Bowie Bick, Parker Elementary. Jean-Victor Thwang, Rusk Elementary, Angel Oliva Jr., San Jacinto Junior High. Tied for 26th, Arham Ansari, Abel Junior High, Chimbuki Sompto Mabala, Bush Elementary, Morgan Thompson, Emerson Elementary, Abdul Falana, Faskin Elementary, Malachi Trailer, Henderson Elementary, Lorelei Grant, James R. Brooks Middle School, Sophia Hernandez, Jones Elementary, Julian Castillo, Lamar Elementary, Paige Santana, Scarborough Elementary, Kendra Porras, Burnett Elementary, Ymir Lucero, Franks Elementary, Vivian Hargrove, Goliad Elementary, did not participate. This article is entitled County Leaders Back Concept of Justice Center Partnership by Ben Schaffer. The Midland County Commissioner's Court approved a resolution on Monday to move forward with Ector County to plan and build the Permian Basin Regional Juvenile Justice Center. Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett said on KWEL Radio last Wednesday that the deal would include both Midland and Ector counties, committing $25 million to the project, while leaders from both entities hope to receive $40 million in state funding. A proposed location for the facility is off Farm to Market Road 1788. County Judge Terry Johnson said Monday he's investigated a joint juvenile justice project like this for years. Johnson added that county judges from 15 of the 17 counties that make up the Permian Basin have to send their juvenile offenders all over the state of Texas because Midland and Odessa won't currently accept them. The resolution, isn't a promise, it's just a direction. We're trying to figure out something, Johnson said. Johnson claimed Fawcett has met with State Senator Kevin Sparks, Republican Midland, and they believe the state funding Fawcett referred to will be available for the project. Federal grant money could also be available, according to Johnson. Presiding Judge Mark Detman said that as the juvenile detention population grows, local facilities, as well as state facilities in Austin, where the county sends long-term juvenile offenders, are overburdened. He said a new joint facility makes sense. Commissioner Scott Ramsey said he likes the concept of the new facility, but he had questions. Mainly, Ramsey wanted to know if other counties in the region would be contributing money to the facility, who will be overseeing the facility, how costs will be divided among the participants, who will staff the center, and where the money would come from. Ramsey also wanted to be clear as to what the county was agreeing to, as verbiage on the resolution states the Midland County Commissioner's Court, quote, is in full support of and will commit $25 million, unquote, to the project. Johnson stated that the two counties are still in the preliminary planning stages, and not all questions have been answered. However, Johnson said that other counties regionally should contribute finances to the project. The two counties have yet to decide who will oversee the facility, according to Johnson. At this point in the process, Johnson is not sure how the costs will be divided amongst Ector, Midland, and surrounding counties, outside of the planned $25 million from Ector and Midland, and $40 million in state funding. The $25 million will come from the county budget, according to Johnson. Ramsey said it is difficult to coordinate projects of this magnitude within one county, let alone multiple. What I'd prefer to do, to agree to something like this, is we do an MOU, Memorandum of Understanding. We go through the planning process, we get everything nailed down, and commit to $25 million. I'd be the first to check, yeah, Ramsey remarked. County Attorney Russell Malm said the resolution would not be binding at this point, as it's a resolution and not a contract. The vote Monday served as an indication of what the court plans to do. Ramsey, factoring in Malm's clarity of the resolution as not being a binding contract, approved the resolution as each county commissioner did. However, Ramsey claimed this project will be difficult, and there are more details to be figured out. This article is entitled National Weather Service: Possible Windstorm Thursday Similar to Sunday's Weather Event, by Robin Bradshaw, staff writer. After a windstorm swept through parts of West Texas on Sunday, the National Weather Service reports it might happen again on Thursday. The National Weather Service in Midland and Odessa shared the storm alert for Thursday. On Sunday, sustained winds at Midland International Airport reached 46 miles per hour. Gusts topped out at 65 miles an hour. Don't shoot the messenger, but Thursday looks to feature yet another widespread wind event, the NWS Post said. We're still ironing out where the strongest winds will be and how strong they'll be, but it looks similar to Sunday's event. The windstorm on Sunday is what meteorologist Jeff Castle from Lubbock described as a, quote, scene from the planet Mars, unquote, with little visibility in most areas. The Weather Channel called the wind event a derecho, described as large clusters of thunderstorms mostly occurring in late spring and summer. From the Spanish word for straight, these windstorms leave wide, long areas of straight-line wind damage, a portion of the website said. A severe thunderstorm may produce an area of damaging winds only a mile or two wide and a few miles long. But derechos can produce damage tens of miles wide and hundreds of miles long. This article is entitled, High Winds Downed Power Lines Spark Small Wildfires in the Chisos Mountains, by Mercedes Cordero. Downed power lines caused by high winds caused a small wildfire in the Chisos Mountains in Big Bend National Park, according to a press release from the National Park Service. Park headquarters at Panther Junction experienced a power outage on Thursday at about 3 p.m. Shortly after, park volunteers reported smoke along the road in the Chisos Basin. Big Bend National Park fire personnel quickly responded and discovered smoke and active flame from a single downed power pole, according to the press release. The fire was estimated at a quarter acre in size and slowly burned through a mixture of grass and desert brush. The Green Gulch fire was officially declared contained by 7 p.m. Crews from Rio Grande Electric were on the scene early Friday morning to replace the pole and repair power lines. Power was fully restored in the afternoon. Strong winds and low humidity have elevated the fire danger to critical warning levels, according to the National Park Service. I would like to express deep gratitude for the fast response of Big Bend's fire management team, said Acting Deputy Superintendent Rick Gupman. Their quick action limited the spread and averted the potential of a major wildfire. This article is entitled, Reporter Telegram Drops Cartoon Dilbert After Creator's Comments, by Hearst Newspapers. The Midland Reporter Telegram dropped Dilbert because the strip's creator, Scott Adams, recently made hateful and discriminatory public statements about black Americans. These statements are offensive to our core values. Adams is entitled to his opinions. The Reporter Telegram is not obliged to give him a platform and financial support. This article is entitled MPD. Midland Man Dies in Collision on West Industrial Avenue, by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. A 39-year-old Midlander died Friday after a collision on West Industrial Avenue, according to Midland Police. MPD officials reported that officials were reported to a crash in the 3600 block of West Industrial Avenue on Friday. the investigation revealed that Jose Alfredo Somoza Murillo's vehicle, a Honda Civic, was traveling eastbound when he failed to maintain a single lane of travel, according to Midland Police. Murillo went into oncoming traffic, and a Ford F-250 struck Murillo's vehicle, MPD reported. The driver of the Ford F-250 was transported to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. Investigation is ongoing. The fatality is the eighth reported inside Midland County this year, according to Reporter Telegram records. This article is entitled, MPD Seeks Info on Women Who Were Seen Abandoning Dogs, by Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. The Midland Police Department is seeking information on two women who were captured on surveillance footage abandoning three dogs. The women are now suspects in a cruelty to animals case. Unfortunately, dogs are abandoned all the time. But this time we have them on video, Midland Crime Stoppers shared on Facebook. On February 17th, between 11:30 a.m. to 12:07 p.m., two women abandoned three dogs at the Green and Clean Car Wash at 5310 Briarwood Avenue. One of the women is described as an older woman with dark hair, wearing red tights, a black jacket, and a black shirt. The women were in a silver 2001 Oldsmobile Intrigue with an unreadable license plate. Call Midland Crime Stoppers at 694-TIPS or download the Crime Stoppers app, P3 Tips, and submit an anonymous mobile tip. No caller ID is ever used, and those providing information will remain anonymous. Reference MPD case number 230-217-021. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Environmental Group Study Details Ozone Pollution in Permian, by Mella McEwen. A study recently released by the Environmental Integrity Project focused on Carlsbad, New Mexico, and the three ozone monitors located in Eddy and Lee counties, New Mexico. The EIP's analysis indicated that when the monitors located around Carlsbad show spikes in pollution, it's most often when the wind is blowing in from the Texas side of the Permian Basin and its oil and gas operations. The science is pretty clear, Elon Levin, EIP's Texas director, told the Reporter Telegram by telephone. It would be clearer with ozone monitors on the Texas side, but we don't need the monitors. He said, the modeling has been done utilizing data reported by the industry itself, as well as from regulatory agencies. There has been so much growth activity and a boom in production, transportation, and processing that it has really affected air quality. Every study coming out shows more venting, more flaring, and more leaks of methane and volatile organic compounds, he added. The EIP and Wildlife Guardians recently wrote the Environmental Protection Agency to urge the Permian Basin be redesignated as in non-attainment of ozone standards under the Clean Air Act. In January, the EPA reclassified a proposal to redesignate the Permian from active to pending. James Beecham, president of the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, told the Reporter Telegram by email, we collected data from the Central Permian and found the area to have very low ozone levels, far below the EPA guidelines. The group you are referring to lists 37 staff on its website, 16 of which are lawyers. If they are worried about spikes at testing sites in New Mexico, they would do well to look at dairy facilities there in New Mexico around those sites, as opposed to Permian Basin producers. Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, also defended producers on the Texas side of the Permian. telling the Reporter-Telegram by email, there is no question that while expanding production, the industry continues to lead in emission-reducing activities, and that Permian Basin oil and gas is among the cleanest production in the world. The EIP and other groups are using every possible tool they can to try and eliminate fossil fuel development in the Permian Basin and the rest of America, for that matter, Shepard continued. Their efforts are completely misguided and will only harm America and our allies. Levin countered by noting that Houston and Dallas long struggled with air quality problems. Nobody shut in Houston. Their economy is pretty good, Levin stated. Those threats that hang out there, that's not what anybody's after. Redesignated the Permian Basin as in non-attainment of ozone standards under the Clean Air Act would put the Permian Basin on a faster track to improving air quality to meet those standards, he said. Even though there are fewer people in the Permian Basin than Houston or Dallas, there's no reason Texans in the Permian Basin shouldn't get the same protection as Houston or Dallas, he said. The best answer to improving air quality in the Permian Basin is for the industry to continue its efforts to reduce emissions, he said. As Houston and Dallas have worked to meet ozone standards, Levin said it takes everyone, everyone, from gas stations to vacuum seals on industrial equipment to reach that goal. If, Levin continued, we can get the air pollution problem in the Permian Basin under control, there would be no need for redesignation. The whole idea is to drive down leaks, venting, and flaring, he said. Levin added that the process of redesignating the Permian as in non-attainment under the ozone standards won't happen overnight. It's not a radical process. It's not a quick process. It's a slow, methodical process, he said. This article is entitled, Vitol Chief Sees Oil at $90 to $100 This Year, by Francine Lacqua, Grant Smith, and Archie Hunter, Bloomberg. Vitol Group said oil prices could return to triple digits later this year as consumption climbs and the market tightens. Demand is expected to hit record levels in the second half of the year, Chief Executive Officer Russell Hardy said in a Bloomberg television interview. The prospect of higher prices in the second half of the year, in the sort of $90 to $100 range, is a real possibility. Benchmark Brent crude is currently hovering around $83 a barrel in London. Oil has traded within a tight $10 range so far this year, as investors weigh a welter of conflicting forces, including the outlook for supplies from Russia, China's reopening, and the trajectory of monetary policy. Other trading giants have also outlined bullish views, with Trafigura predicting that prices will head above $90 a barrel and reach $100 at some point this year. And Mercuria Energy Group anticipating price gains that will extend into 2024. Some of the biggest names on Wall Street, such as Goldman Sachs Group Inc. and Morgan Stanley, also forecast a rally in the second half. Oil inventory levels look reasonable over the next months, but should tighten after that, with this year's oil demand set to increase by 2.2 million barrels per day over 2022 levels, according to Vitol estimates. Most of that will be from diesel, naphtha, and liquid petroleum gas, with gasoline and jet fuel both still playing catch-up, Hardy said in a separate interview. With jet fuel, we anticipate we'll end the year close to 500,000 barrels a day less than 2019, because the schedules are just not going to get where they were, he said. That puts pressure on strained production, with OPEC countries relatively flat out in terms of output, and with Russia's logistical difficulties in bringing oil to market. You don't have much room on the supply side is the reality. So the potential for a rally is certainly there, he said. Sanctions on Russia have created some logistical issues as cargoes are rerouted on longer routes to buyers in Asia, prompting Moscow's recent warning that it will curb production. However, Europe has comfortable inventory levels and isn't facing strain from the upheaval, Hardy said. Over the long term, plans for enormous investment in renewable energy are bringing forward the point at which global oil consumption ultimately tops out, which is likely to come around the end of the decade, he added. Investment is still needed in oil supplies in the meantime. We're on a very rapid path to decarbonization, Hardy said. This article is entitled, Majority of Texans Support Shift to Solar Energy, UH Poll Finds, by Andrea Leinfelder, staff writer. The majority of Texans support expanding the country's reliance on solar energy and other alternative power sources, according to a survey by the University of Houston's Hobby School of Public Affairs. The survey found that 64% of Texans favor expanding U.S. reliance on solar power plants, 59% favor reliance on geothermal plants, and 57% favor reliance on wind turbine farms. Texas has an established energy legacy. It leads the nation in both energy production and consumption, Renee Cross, senior executive director and researcher at the Hobby School, said in a statement. But we are part of the energy transition, and a majority of Texans across the board, across partisan lines, are supporting alternate energy sources. The survey found that 42% of Texans favor increasing reliance on nuclear power plants and natural gas-fired power plants. And the majority of the 41% who preferred expanding onshore conventional oil and gas came from baby boomers and the silent generation, those born after the greatest generation and before the boomers. However, there was a noteworthy increase of between 8% and 11% in the proportion of Texans who favor expanding offshore oil and gas wells, fracking, and coal, Mark P. Jones, senior research fellow at the Hobby School, said in a statement. The online survey polled 1,200 Texans who were 18 and older about legislation to be considered during the 2023 legislative session. It was conducted between January 9th and 19th in English and Spanish. The author can be reached at andrea.leinfelder@houstonchronicle.com. This is the obituary column. Tuesday, February 28th. Brenda Ann Job. Brenda Ann Job, 82, of Midland, passed away on February 22nd. The family will receive friends on Tuesday, February 28th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held on Wednesday, March 1st at 2 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welsh Chapel. The family will have a private graveside service at Evergreen Cemetery in Stanton. Brenda was born on June 18, 1940, to Dorothy and Merle Heald in Midland. She is survived by her mother, Dorothy M. Crawford, brother and sisters-in-law Paul and Angie Crawford, Mark and Jan Crawford, Rosa Heald, Lisa Heald, and Donna Henson, daughter Darrellyn Job, sons Darrell and Darren Job, 7 grandchildren and 14 great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her husband, William D. Bill Job, father Merle Heald, stepfather J.D. Crawford, brothers Harold D. Heald and Don M. Heald, and sister Glenna M. Cohn. The family suggests memorials be donated to Friendship Church in Frisco, Texas, Pastor Mark Crawford presiding, or Home Hospice of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, February 28, 2023. Water in Energy Confab starts Wednesday. Water's crucial importance will be reviewed from every angle Wednesday and Thursday during the Permian Basin Water in Energy Conference at the Horseshoe Arena at 2514 Arena Trail in Midland. After an 8:30 a.m. welcome by University of Texas Permian Basin President Sandra Woodley, Wednesday's program will open with a 9 a.m. discussion of Don't Mess with Texas Water Edition by Texas Water Development Board Chairwoman Brooke Paup. At 9:45 a.m., analysis of partnerships in the Permian, the evolution of water technology, and future pathways of commercialization will feature Dr. Zachariah Hildenbrand of the University of Texas, El Paso. Michael Dyson, CEO, Infinity Water Solutions, Mark Fain, Permian Commercial Manager, ExxonMobil, John Moeller, Operations Project Manager, Chevron, Whitney Dodson, Vice President of Beneficial Reuse, ARIS, and Jason G. Herman, Program Manager for the Groundwater Quality Bureau, New Mexico Environment Department. Predicting attendance of 300 to 400, Conference Chair Richard Brantley said recently that the event will be more comprehensive than a produced water seminar. The contemporary concerns we're dealing with are beneficial reuse of produced water, and how can we grow that percentage, said Brantley, Senior Vice President of Operations at University Lands. Certainly, seismicity, which may result from injection, is another concern. I think somebody said it well the other day that the Midland-Odessa community is wide awake about the seismic occurrences, earthquakes, as you've experienced and we have all experienced. Sponsors are XTO Energy, Diamondback Energy, NGL Water Solutions, and Goodnight Midstream. You may register at 432-552-2853 or waterinenergy@utpb.edu. Tickets are $650. Academia, regulators, and industry working together to address water injection challenges in the Permian Basin will be addressed at 11 a.m. Wednesday by moderator Robert Crane, Executive Vice President, Texas Pacific Water Resources, Dr. Katie Smy, Co-Principal Investigator at the Center for Injection and Seismicity Research, UT Bureau of Economic Geology, Paul Dubois, Assistant Director of Technical Permitting of the Oil and Gas Division, Railroad Commission of Texas, and Stefan Husenoder, Geoscience Technology Advisor, ExxonMobil. After lunch, the topic will be Water Policy Opportunities and Challenges, State Land Initiatives and Insights from Produced Water Research Consortia of Texas and New Mexico with Moderator Ben Shepherd, President, Permian Basin Petroleum Association, Brantley, Rusty Smith, Executive Director, Texas Produced Water Consortium, and Mike Hightower, Director, New Mexico Produced Water Research Consortium. There will be a 1:30 p.m. program Wednesday on advanced treatment of produced water for beneficial reuse outside the oil and gas industry with Ryan Hall, Director of Technical Operations, NGL Energy Partners, Dr. Philip Gleckman, CEO, Sun Vapor, Hightower, and Dr. James Rosenblum, Research Assistant Professor, Colorado School of Mines. Opportunities and Challenges, Lithium and Other Critical Mineral Extraction from Permian Produced Water will be reviewed starting at 2:15 with moderator Jake Hendricks, Senior Director of Business Development, Renovo Resources, Bradley Murphy, President CEO, Tetra Technologies, Scott Conley, Senior Vice President of Commercialization, EnergyX and Dr. Chris Herrich, Chief Operating Officer, XRI. Project Pareto, a free and open-sourced produced water optimization framework for practitioners, researchers, and students will be discussed at 3:15 p.m. Wednesday by Dr. Miguel A. Zamaripa Perez, Senior Research Engineer and Produced Water Application for Beneficial Reuse, Environmental Impact and Treatment Optimization Development Lead, National Energy Technology Laboratory. Wednesday's final program will be at 4 p.m. on Continuing Education, Ethics in a Changing World with Max Wright of the Schaefer, Davis, O'Leary, and Stoker Law Firm, and Dr. Michelle Harmon, Senior HR Compliance Consultant with the Energy People Group and UTPB Business Lecturer. American Petroleum Institute President CEO Mike Summers' keynote speech at the conference banquet at 7 p.m. Wednesday at the Midland Petroleum Club will be on a Washington course correction is needed for America's energy security. Following the presentation of Student Research Poster Awards at 8:30 a.m. Thursday at the Horseshoe. Environmental stewardship and staying ahead of the coming EPA regulations will be discussed by moderator Steve Beach, Dean of the UTPB College of Business, Sam Sledge, CEO Director, ProPetro Services, John Durand, Vice Chairman, XRI, Trevor Gleisner, Supervisor, Emissions Control, Diamondback, and Lee Fuller, Officer of Environment and General Strategy, Independent Petroleum Association of America. Hightower will review land application of produced water in the western U.S. at 9:45 a.m. Thursday and a 10:45 a.m. program on development of human health and environmental risk assessment framework for beneficial reuse of treated produced water will feature Dr. Azivi Aziz, Environmental Associate, ExxonMobil Biomedical Sciences. The use of treated produced water for agriculture production will be discussed at 11:30 a.m. Thursday by Dr. Katie Lewis, Associate Professor, Texas A&M AgriLife Research, and After Lunch, Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, Commissioner Emily Lindley, will review TCEQ's 2023 outlook on the EPA, the 88th legislative session, the Texas energy sector, and everything in between. Looking over the horizon, exploring potential outcomes of non-oil field beneficial reuse and its role in today's decision-making will be analyzed at 1:30 p.m. Thursday by moderator Kelly Bennett, CEO, B3 Insight. Rick McCurdy, Vice President of Innovation and Sustainability, Select Energy Services. Ben Warden, Water Management Supervisor, Diamondback, and Alan Van Riet, Senior Operations Manager for Water Management, Pioneer Natural Resources. Water Management Research and Development at the U.S. Department of Energy Office of Fossil Energy and Carbon Management will be reviewed at 2:15 p.m. Thursday by Haichim Hadheris, Produced Water Program Manager, Department of Energy Office of Fossil Energy and Carbon Management. There will be a 3:15 p.m. Thursday presentation on federal water case law by Natasha Martin of the Graves, Dougherty, Heron, and Moody Law Firm, and the concluding program will be on seismicity and water liability at 3:45 with Paul Tuff of McElroy, Sullivan, Miller & Weber and Adam Friedman of McElroy, Sullivan, Miller & Weber. Two shot during underage party in Odessa. Two 18-year-old men were shot in the upper body early Sunday morning during an underage drinking party, According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers learned about a party in the 4,000 block of Candy Lane around 1:20 p.m. Sunday. And when they arrived, they started speaking with Ryan Gene Phillips, 39, who said he owned the home. While speaking with him, they saw gunfire coming from the home, forced their way inside, and saw roughly 20 underage minors consuming alcohol. They also found two people had been shot. One of the injured, Tremaine Batty, 18, was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of unlawful carry of a weapon, a misdemeanor, while being treated at a local hospital. He remained in the jail on a $2,000 surety bond. The second teenager remains hospitalized in stable condition, according to an OPD news release. A medical center hospital spokesman said he is in the intensive care unit. OPD Corporal Steve LeSueur said neither teenager is cooperating with the authorities, but they know the two were arguing with each other when the gunfire broke out. After obtaining a search warrant, officers found copious amounts of alcohol in the house and on the property, an OPD report stated. They also found a .22 caliber rifle and a .380 pistol inside a safe, the report stated. Phillips was arrested on suspicion of violating the city's social host ordinance and purchasing furnishing alcohol to minors, both misdemeanors. Because he has three prior felony convictions, he was also arrested on suspicion of being a felon in possession of a firearm, the report stated. Phillips remains in the Ector County Jail on a U.S. Marshal's hold and surety bonds totaling $12,000. An investigation is ongoing, and once complete, the case will be presented to the Ector County District's Attorney Office. Anyone with further information is encouraged to call the Odessa Police Department or submit a tip to Crime Stoppers. Quick hits, free tax assistance. The Ector County Northside Senior Center, 1225 Adams Avenue, has scheduled free tax assistance for seniors from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays through April 11th. Appointment is required. For more information or to make an appointment, call 432-337-5281. United Way. United Way of Odessa has scheduled an annual meeting from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. today at the MCM Grande Fun Dome Hotel, 6201 I-20 Business Loop East. The United Way Board of Directors has scheduled outcomes from the 2022 campaign, including partner agency allocations, venture grant funding, and campaign successes. Seating is open to the public. Tickets are $50 per person or $370 for a table of eight. For more information or to reserve a seat, call the United Way of Odessa office at 432-332-0941 or email krobles@unitedwayodessa.org. STEM Academy Spirit Night. The STEM Academy has scheduled a spirit night from 3 p.m. to 10 p.m. today at Texas Roadhouse, 4221 Grandview Avenue. Show the digital flyer and 10% of the proceeds from your meal will benefit the school. For more information or for the flyer, visit tinyurl.com/3wu8t6nk. Foster Adopt Q&A. The Attic Foster Network and One Accord for Kids has scheduled a Foster Adopt Q&A event from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. today at Mid-Cities Church, 8700 Highway 191 Midland. Visit tinyurl.com/6u7sv8d9. Cheap Trick. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM 1788 Midland, has scheduled Cheap Trick today. The doors will open at 6 p.m. and the event will start at 7 p.m. Tickets start at $59.95. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/3mxjzh5e. severe weather awareness class. Ready Midland County has scheduled a Skywarn class at 10 a.m. March 25th at the Midland County Horseshoe Pavilion, rooms A, B, and C, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. Learn about severe weather and severe weather safety. Become an official National Weather Service spotter. Skywarn class is free and open to all ages. Registration is not required. For more information and full schedule, visit weather.gov/MAF/top_Skywarn.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.